This is MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Mora, and this is Trending Now with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, as always, Bill Proposky. And Josh, it's been a while. We are back. What's up?
Well, we have a very good show today. Scott Trenti is the executive director of Senior Care. Will be our first guest. Marcia Finkelstein, who's the candidate for Democratic State Committee, will be our second guest. Joe Orlando, a local city councilor, is going to talk about the city council and also some thoughts about the national presidential election. And local activist Peg Lico is going to talk about the presidential election too, and offer her perspectives about some of the Democrats in the race.
We're going to have our own reality show, are we?
Well, something like that.
All right. Cool. All right. Stand by. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? When you come to see us, you're treated like part of our family. GMC has a great lineup with Sierra pickups, the ever-popular Acadia, and the redesigned 2016 Terrain. We are the dealer that will provide you with the best buying experience possible. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new game time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley Destination Restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at bradfordtavern.com.
Hello, sports fans. This is Wally, the voice of Honeydew Donuts. All right, you're getting ready to go to a game. I don't care if it's morning, afternoon, or night. Don't forget, stop into Honeydew Donuts and get yourself a cup of coffee. How about that large iced coffee? That Mocha Madness one is unbelievable. You'll think you went to Honeydew Heaven. So remember, you heard it here first on MSONewsSports.com. And remember the name, it's Honeydew Donuts, the only way to go.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is the Executive Director of Senior Care, Inc., Scott Trenti. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you for having me.
Well, we usually start each show. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your infomercial, your background, your bio, whatever, and then we can talk a little bit about some of the good work you do with Senior Care.
Okay, thank you again. Well, I've worked in the Elder Care Network the past 22 years. I've been at Senior Care 19 years with a break in service. I've been here since 2005. In the Elder Care Network, I started out in Elder Protective Services as a caseworker and then a program director for Protective. Moved on from that after 13 years to take on the Director of Client Services at one of our sister agencies, Minuteman Senior Services, down in Bedford, Mass. Came back to Senior Care in 2010 as the Director of Home Care and was promoted to Executive Director in 2013. Prior to that, I worked for the Department of Developmental Services for 11 years as a working in the psychology department, writing treatment plans and for developmentally disabled folks, and providing staff training and other related things. And the other chunk of my career, while I was here at Senior Care, I worked for 13 years up at So in a nutshell, you know, that's what the bulk of my experience has been.
Great. Now, tell us, senior care is in, you work in what city, comprises of what cities of oversight, and what are the array of services that you provide?
Okay, so senior care is what's referred to as an aging service access point. We're one of 26 throughout Massachusetts. Primary charge is to implement the state home care program under the auspices of the Executive Office of Elder Affairs. We're also a area agency on aging, which is a federal designation, so we receive some Title III or federal funding for some of our programs as well. So the communities that we cover, we have 9 communities, starting in down north, down in Beverly, in Topsfield, Ipswich, Hamilton, Wenham, and all the way up through Cape Ann, Rockport, Gloucester, Manchester-by-the-Sea, and Essex. So these are the communities that we're charged with, and we provide services to about 4,000 elders per month in our various programs. We are certainly a mission-driven agency. If you'd indulge me for a moment, I'd just like to tell you what our mission statement is.
Sure.
Is that we're a consumer-centered organization, and we provide and coordinate services to elders, folks 60 and over, and others, enabling them to live independently at home, or in a setting of their choice while remaining part of their community. We highly value consumer choice and folks' right to self-determination. We put the elder at the center of all decision-making and honor their wishes to the best extent possible. As far as services go, I mentioned the state home care program, and our home care department is our largest department here at Senior Care, consisting of nurses and care managers. Care managers coordinate services like personal care, homemaker services, chore workers, companion services, adult day health programs, lifeline, etc. So we have a range of home care programs depending upon a person's need. Some are mass health programs, others are not. We also have a large Meals on Wheels program and several congregate dining sites throughout our 9 communities. Everyone has heard of Meals on Wheels. We deliver roughly 14,000 meals per month in our various communities. So we're very proud of the Meals on Wheels and our nutrition program. We also have protective services. So these folks investigate reports of elder abuse, including physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, caregiver neglect, financial exploitation, and also folks that are self-neglecting and placing themselves at risk of harm. So our protective service department has certainly grown over the year. Each year we see our reports increase, and I think that that's pretty consistent statewide. So we receive roughly anywhere between 50 and 70 reports per month. Another program that we're quite proud of and there's quite a need for is our caregiver support program. There are many caregivers out there who struggle with their and to hold down jobs, or perhaps they have their own family issues to deal with, or their own health problems. So we do have a specialist who will meet with caregivers on an as-needed basis and provide that support, provide referral, offer support groups in various locations, and really work with that caregiver to provide education and support for their level of stress, whatever that might be. Another program that we have here at Senior Care is nursing home diversion programs. We call it care transitions. So I mentioned that we have nurses on staff, and our nurses visit all of the 7 nursing facilities in our 9 communities. And one of their charges in the nursing facilities is to identify people who might be able to return to the community or wish to return to the community. So in coordination with our care transitions staff, officers and the facility staff and the elder and any family that may be involved and others to try to come up with a plan to help folks to get back into the community as they wish. Another program, Josh, that we have is money management program. So we have folks that, for whatever reason, have difficulty managing their finances, including paying their bills. So trained volunteers in the money management program will meet with folks and help them to ensure that their bills are paid on a monthly basis, help them to reconcile their checkbooks, and provide that assistance, financial assistance, as the elder chooses. So this is also a very, very good program. We have a program called Options Counseling. And one of the changes we've seen over the years is that agencies like Senior Care, who in the past have been dedicated and charged with working with folks 60 and above, over the past 7-8 years, we now have an options counseling program where we're able to provide this services not only to elders but also to adults with disabilities under the age of 60. It's meant to be a short-term intervention whereby a trained options counselor by the Executive Office of Elder Affairs will meet with a person. It could be by phone, it could be by email, or ideally in person, and provide that person, who may be an elder, maybe a younger person, it may be a caregiver, with the information about what's out there, what services are available to a younger adult who has a disability. We work very closely with one of our partner agencies. It's called the Greater North Shore Link, and this group includes not only Senior Care but also North Shore Elder Services, Greater Lynn Senior Services, the Independent Living Center of the Greater North Shore and Cape Ann, who specialize in working with younger folks with disabilities, as well as Element Care and North Shore Career Center. So our group is meant to offer no wrong door services so that we recognize the difficulty of navigating what can be a very complicated elder and disability network, and through our contacts and collaboration with the Greater North Shore Link, we're also able to help younger folks as well. Another change that we've seen in programs that we've introduced over the past 5 years are evidence-based programs. These are programs that have been heavily researched and proven to, through data and through the research that's been conducted, to be helpful to people. These are group-type programs. We have several here at Senior Care. One is called the Matter of Balance, which is a fall prevention program. Another is called Chronic Disease Self-Management. This is a program to better help people who have and struggle with chronic diseases. Another one is Healthy Eating, which our nutrition program heads up. And we have a program called Powerful Tools for Caregivers, which is, again, a group setting. Typically, all these programs are anywhere from 8 to 12 people, meet over a period of 6 to 8 weeks. One time per week, and it's a very well-defined curriculum that has to be adhered to, and it's very interactive. People that have participated in these programs really like them. The other evidence-based program is we, in conjunction with our care transitions program, we're able to offer folks, when they return home and prior to that, coaching to assist them in their adjustment to returning to the community or preparing for medical appointments and things like that. Another program that we have is called our RSVP program, RSVP Volunteer Program. So we have about 350 active volunteers who are managed and coordinated through the RSVP program. And these volunteers work at other nonprofits. Volunteers are age 55 and over, and they'll work in hospital settings, councils on aging, food pantries, shelters, and the like, as well as helping us out here at Senior Care with Meals on Wheels drivers and I failed to mention our ombudsman program, so there are trained volunteers who go into nursing homes to ensure that people's rights are being adhered to and the facilities are clean, and they'll help to mediate problems that might be occurring between residents and in the facility and so forth. So ombudsman volunteers, our money management volunteers. So our RSVP program is very, very important source, not only to senior care, but we're able to help other nonprofits through timely and well-coordinated matching of volunteers to what they want to do when they come to senior care to volunteer. That's very important, that matching part, to make sure that that volunteer is getting the experience that they want. And lastly, I'll tell you that we have a very unique program at Senior Care. It's called the Positive Connections Program. And this is a pet program. And we have a person who works with people who have issues with their pets, folks that may need assistance with finding some respite services for a beloved pet. And perhaps they have to go into the hospital to have a procedure done, but they don't have anyone to take care of their pet. To a limited extent, we can also help to defer some of the costs of veterinarian bills and pet medications, et cetera. I guess the one thing I'd really like to emphasize, Josh, is, you know, our state home care program, we have three programs where there is cost sharing, but all of the other programs that I just mentioned at Senior Care are all free. There may be a suggested donation, for example, in our Meals on Wheels program, but I really want to emphasize to the community and to the listeners that our programs are free, and we want you to take advantage of us. All you need to do is call us. We have an information and referral department, and they will field your call, help you to navigate the network, help you to obtain the services that you need, either within the walls of Senior Care or with our many community partners that we deal with in our nine communities. We work pretty closely with hospitals and physician offices and law enforcement and housing authorities, the VNAs, veteran associations and veteran services, and many, many others. So it's important for folks to know that if we can't help you, our INR department can certainly direct you to the proper place to go, and that it also includes our Greater North Shore Link, which is also a tremendous asset and provides that no wrong door aspect to people seeking help, so they're not bebopped around and have to call five people to get the answer, to get the assistance that they're looking for.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly many great things that your organization is doing to help these nine communities, and I appreciate your taking some to share that with us.
Well, thank you, Josh. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Great, Scott. Take care now. Thank you.
Thanks again. Right. Bye-bye.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low E glass, low maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our guest is Marcia Finkelstein, who is the candidate for Democratic State Committee. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
Well, we start each show as we bring a new guest on, and tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and then let's talk a little bit about the office you're running for, and if we have time, talk about some of the races that are coming up next week.
Sure. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I live in Salem, and I'm currently, as you said, the chair of the Salem Democratic State Committee. I believe you said that. I've been an organizer and activist for more than 25 years. It's one of my passions. It's kind of like my unpaid day job when I'm not working for myself. I am self-employed, and I own and operate a business in Salem. I work with animals, and I love it. I enjoy Democratic politics with its ups and downs, and I've been very active in working on campaigns both locally, regionally, and nationally for many years. I pretty much stopped counting. I grew up in a large, somewhat liberal family. They're the youngest of seven, so I kind of learned at an early age, if you want something, you got to go for it. And so that's what I've done. I am running for the Democratic State Committee, which is, in essence, the legislative body of the Massachusetts Democratic Party. Each state senate district has representatives, and I will be on the ballot this Tuesday, March 1st, running for the committee woman seat, which is a ballot seat on the Democratic primary ballot.
And your election is the primary is next week?
Yes, it's March 1st, Tuesday, March 1st. The polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.
And who votes?
That will be on the same primary ballot as the presidential candidate.
And who votes for your candidacy? Anybody in Salem or Gloucester, or what area does that encompass?
The second Essex district is the Senate district we're referring to.
Yeah.
And that is made up of the cities and towns of Beverly, Danvers, Peabody, Salem, and Topsfield only. Our state senator is Joan Lovely. So
okay.
Anyone that resides in Joan Lovely's Senate district who is a Democrat or an unenrolled voter who plans to poll a Democratic primary ballot is eligible to vote in this election.
Okay. So for each senatorial seat in our district, there is a probably somebody running for the Democratic State Committee, and I would assume the Republican State Committee as well?
Correct.
Okay.
Each Senate district is given 4 seats for gender balance, 1 male, 1 female. In my race, there are vacancies on the female side and the male side, and there are also 2 seats that are elected in a community meeting, which is a sort of separate and more complicated race in and of itself.
Okay. So tell us about what are some of the issues that you're talking about or engaging people that you'd want to talk about in relation to the position you're seeking.
Well, the things that have concerned me for many years, in more general, I would love to see people be more educated and to make voting easier, but also to help people access the polls. I think that the state is making a lot of strides in changing in November they'll be changing to early voting, so that people will have the option to, you know, vote before Election Day if that doesn't work around their schedule. And so having access to, you know, the polls for people all over the Commonwealth and the country is important to me. I also want to help identify and help create partnerships with other members on the state committee so we could create better pipelines and improve the messaging that the party has, because I think it could use some improvement.
Now, you're obviously, as a Democrat, you have probably formed an opinion about the presidential race. Is that something you'd care to share with the listening audience?
Oh, I'm always up for talking about politics. What I love about this race is that we have, when you look at the debates on both sides, there's so much more substance when you're talking about a Democratic debate. Now, I am not shy to say that I am supporting Hillary Clinton. There's a lot of reasons why I'm supporting Hillary Clinton. It doesn't mean I hate Bernie Sanders. I actually think he's phenomenal. And I'm grateful that he's in this race because it really brings the conversation to a place that has helped the Secretary of State, helped her to kind of see some issues that I think that were necessary, things like income inequality, Black Lives Matter. I think having a very robust and very good conversation on the Democratic side helps us to make a well-informed decision. On the right side, it's just a clown show.
You know, it's interesting that you've raised that because I've had the conversation recently with folks talking politics and said, you know, what is gained by Bernie being in the race? And one of the point of discussion was, does Hillary benefit because Bernie or anybody is in the race? If there were only one candidate in the race, even though they'd have it wrapped up and they'd have wouldn't have to spend money and do all of this, they wouldn't be in the headlines at all. They'd be the headlines would dominate the Republican race, and it would be who you'd be out of sight almost. So to some extent, is the Democratic race whoever becomes, assuming it's Clinton, if she becomes the nominee for the Democratic Party, is she served well because she has a competitor now?
As I said, I think that having a robust campaign season is good for everyone, because at the end of the day, whoever our nominee is, I will get behind them, he or she, and that the goal is to elect a president for all of America, not just those folks who are on the fringe, those on either side, because I see stuff on Facebook all the time and on social media and then, on TV and whatnot. And there's just some very interesting conversations that have been coming up. And I think that having a robust Democratic primary process and eventually a convention in the summer is really going to help people sort through the things that matter to them, especially Democrats and people who intend to vote Democrat or are thinking of voting Democrat. And I think it's good. I think it's good. And it'll all sort itself out at the end of the day.
And to what extent is, if you look at the race now, how much does having another candidate in there impact how people vote? And I frame that this way. If a person's running against an empty ballot, you have a phenomenon where people say, well, they've got it anyway, why do I have to vote? So they don't show up. And I think you see that more in preliminary or primary elections than in general elections. The other thing is, though, that if you have an empty ballot, you might be seeing 80-20 split. People will check the empty box, or people just don't vote for that slot. They don't capture all of the votes of people who actually voted. Do those types of attitudes or phenomena impact the rest of the ticket, people like that are running for your position, et cetera? So is your campaign, do you benefit by there being a race for other seats that are going to be voted on next week?
Well, it's a funny question to answer, because the state committee reforms every 4 years, so that's the ballot that we're on every 4 years.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. If this was like more of a local race, like a city council, and there was a mayoral race at the same time, that would really help.
Yep.
But I honestly can't say that it doesn't hurt. I mean, if it was a separate ballot, no one would probably vote, or very few. But it's also, in my race, it's a job that, I have a good friend and ward counselor who recently endorsed me, and he always jokes with me, because he knows how to jive with me, that it's a race that no one knows about or cares about, but I do. So my job as a candidate, in any race, is to get my message out there, give people a reason to think about it, and come vote for me. And so I focus on my experience and I get things done. I've turned things around in Salem. There used to be a committee that was on paper, as people like to jokingly call the city committee a paper tiger. And sure, we actually are now, after several years of my leadership and working with my members to push it and make it happen, we now meet regularly. We have coordinated campaign offices. We help people identify what campaigns they want to work on. We really have done a lot of work. And it is team, but it's also leadership. And that speaks back to my experience and my background as an organizer and an activist as well.
Which Republican candidate would be the best for your choice, Hillary Clinton, to run against in November?
I don't know. I'm really trying to think about that.
Okay.
I just, you know, I focus on doing the work for my candidate and getting the word out.
Okay. So, any predictions for next week?
I don't know if you wanted, but
no, that's fine.
I can't really think about that right now.
Any predictions for next week?
In regards to my race or the presidential primary?
How about the presidential primary?
I don't know. I think it's going to be close. It'll really be about getting out the vote. Whoever does the best job of getting their supporters to the polls, and there's a lot of positive energy out there on both sides. I know a lot of people working for Bernie in the North Shore, and I know a lot of people working for Hillary in the North Shore and around the state, and they're busting their butts for their candidate. And it's really exciting. So I'm excited to see what happens. Not just for myself, but...
No, that's great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now, and we wish you the very best of success going forward with your candidacy and your work as an advocate on behalf of these causes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Marcia.
Thanks to your audience for listening.
Thank you.
Take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new game time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley Destination Restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at bradfordtavern.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? Our service department ranks as one of the best in customer satisfaction because we respect our customers' busy schedule and we do repairs as quickly as possible with the least amount of inconvenience to you. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is City Councilor Joseph Orlando. Joe, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Josh? Thanks
Good.
For having me.
Great. I want to start in. You're a newly elected city councilor. Tell us about what your experience has been these first few months since being sworn in on January 1st and what you're doing as a member of the council, be your assignments on standing committees or other committees.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm really excited to be actually in the seat now. It was a long campaign season leading up to it, so I'm glad I'm actually getting the opportunity to do what I hope, and that is to do what I can to offer to help the city. It's really been interesting so far. A lot of it, really, I mean, is learning the procedure. You know, whether you're learning about Robert's Rules of Order, you know, how a meeting is run, you know, who you ask when you want to get something accomplished. Is it the mayor's office or the administration, or is it the you know, you go to the clerk's office to do a council order? It's a lot of it is, you know, who responds to who and in what order you do things. That's the hardest part I've run into so far, but I'm getting a hang of it now, finally. I'm actually budget and finance vice chair. So, Joe Cialino, the council president, appointed me to budget and finance, which I'm really appreciative of, because that's where I thought I could, you know, have the greatest positive effect on the city. But, you know, so far, you know, we haven't really tackled any humongous things yet, but, you know, I think the council works together pretty well. We have differing opinions, perspectives, which I think is healthy, and it's been fun.
Great. And what are some of the, I know that any time that the departments have to transfer money between departments or within certain categories, those kind of things come before your committee, loan orders.
Yeah, exactly. The Budget and Finance Committee deals with any, if the police department wants to transfer a few thousand dollars from one account to another, you know, they come and they ask us.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of it is, you know, they're not asking for more money than they've already been budgeted. They're just asking to use their money in a different way most of the time. Sometimes they come in front of us asking, they applied for a grant, and they want to use some of the money that was budgeted to match that grant. You know, they have to ask us for those, or just to accept a grant that doesn't require a match even.
Yeah.
Which is like a no-brainer, but they still have to ask us for some reason. But they do. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm looking forward to budget season, which is coming up in a couple months. But right now, yeah, mostly it's just, you know, can we accept this grant? Can we, you know, match this grant? Can we transfer funds within our budget?
Great. And now, once the budget is submitted, it's, what, 120 days after the election of the governor. So sometime in, what, April, May, you'll get a copy of the budget?
I think we get it in May, the beginning of May.
And yep.
We commence about a month and a half of review. You know, most days out of the week, I guess, we meet, and I'm a first-timer, so I haven't done it yet, but we just got the schedule. It looks like we're going to be at least 3 to 4 days a week reviewing line items on the budget that the mayor proposes.
Great. And you'll, in doing so, you'll get a copy of the school budget as well?
I believe so, yeah.
That's okay.
Correct. I believe the school has to submit their budget to us as well.
Great. What are some of the other committees that I know there are other standing committees? Do you attend any of those meetings out of interest, or how does that work?
Yeah, so the Ordinance Administration and Planning and Development subcommittees are the other two subcommittees of the City Council. And also the council president will appoint a city councilor to be a liaison to other boards and commissions, such as the Fisheries Commission or the Downtown Development Commission, or the I was appointed to the Tourism Commission. And you know, in that way you act as a go-between. And you know, for when the Tourism Commission meets, I'll be there as a representative of the City Council. And same thing with Scott Memhard to the Fisheries Commission, and Sean Nolan to the Stageport Park Advisory Committee, I believe. So, you know, we all, you know, have different roles there. As far as between the subcommittees, you know, if an area of interest pops up that's going to affect the Budget and Finance Committee, for instance, and it comes up at O&A or it comes up at T&D, then usually you'll get some of the other counselors to attend. That happens more frequently, I think, at BNF, Budget and Finance, because, you know, the budget affects everybody. So, you know, we've had a lot of counselors coming to those. I haven't myself yet attended any other subcommittee meetings, but I do plan on going to more O&A and P&D meetings coming up, because we're going to be dealing with some things related to the Fuller School, for instance, and other major projects.
You mentioned the Fuller School. That was going to be my next question. The mayor announcing just this week that they've come to terms with an agreement with the YMCA to purchase that facility. What has to be done now? What are the next steps for that to continue?
Well, now that they've agreed in principle, they have to actually put it down in writing, and they have to do a purchase and sale agreement. Just like selling a house or buying a house, sure. You have to agree to the terms of the sale. So they've agreed in principle, I guess, based on the proposal and the acceptance of that proposal. But they have to, you know, put together a purchase and sale agreement. And then it has to come before various boards and commissions to get approvals on doing certain types of work. I'm certain that the planning board is going to be involved, the zoning board of appeals, and the city council, you know, permitting, special permits, things like that,
okay.
On the actual building of the tearing down and rebuilding of the property. So that's the next phase of this. People may remember recently the Beauport Gloucester Hotel.
Yes.
Down on the fort, and you know that went through a very similar process. You know, after they got their overlay district through the planning board, then they had to go through special permits with the city council, I believe, and there was a bunch of other different levels of permitting they had to go through. So, that's next.
Okay. Now, so once the execute a purchase and sale agreement between the city of Gloucester and the YMCA or whatever corporate division.
Yeah, it's actually a group of four.
Yeah.
Entities. The YMCA is one of those entities. Sam Park and Company is another. Wendover Construction is a third, and then there's I believe it's Dolliver, which is like a company that does housing. They've
yep.
done a lot of housing projects and housing, developments. So they have a pretty good track record as well, I understand.
And
so those four companies together are working to develop this property.
And then does that purchase and sale agreement, is that subject to city council approval, or does that just happen now?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. I don't think the actual purchase and sale agreement is subject to city council approval, but I believe the funding of it is.
Okay.
So, you know, that's going to come before budget and finance and then the city council as a whole. At some point, you know, the actual financing behind it, you know, what they're going to pay us, what we're going to receive, where that money's going to go, et cetera.
Great, great. You have a few minutes. Can we chat about the upcoming presidential election? What your thoughts are, and
sure thing.
I know your role as city councilor is not a bipartisan one, but you are certainly a Republican, and you have your choice of a candidate. Is that something you'd feel comfortable sharing with the audience?
Yeah, sure. I'll take off my city council hat for a second because. Obviously, on the city council level, we don't designate whether we're a Democrat or a Republican. It's a nonpartisan position, which actually makes it a lot easier to get stuff done,
yeah.
as it were. I'm a supporter in this primary of Marco Rubio. He's my candidate of choice. I think for a lot of reasons, I think he's young. He's sort of a regular guy. Not a lot of people think of this or know this, but until a couple of years ago, he was still paying his student loans. He's, you know, he's in his early 40s. He came from very little, and he's worked his way towards being a U.S. senator and now a presidential candidate. I find that very impressive. He's of Cuban descent, which I think is important in this election. We're going to be dealing with immigration coming up. It seems to be one of the biggest issues in this election cycle. And I don't think it is anybody more qualified than him to talk about that in this election cycle. Maybe besides Ted Cruz, who, you know, has a similar background. I support Rubio. I'm sort of a moderate Republican in a lot of ways, and I think that Rubio's a more moderate guy. And so, that's where my support of him comes from. And I think being from Florida, which is a swing state, it could be very important to the Republican Party to nominate somebody who has, you know, sort of 25 or whatever they are electoral votes.
They're a prime state. It's certainly a prime state, yeah. What do you think about the having the passing of Justice Scalia? Do you think that the replacement would be voted this term or next? Or how do you have a view on that?
Are you asking for my opinion about what should happen or what
yes,
will what, happen?
What should happen?
Okay, well, our Constitution's pretty clear that the president has the authority to appoint somebody or to nominate somebody for appointment, and it requires the advice and the consent of the Senate. So it's his constitutional right as the President of the United States to nominate somebody for appointment, whoever he wants.
Okay.
And then it's the Senate's job to either accept, reject, or not vote on it at all. That's also their constitutional right. So it seems what's happening here is that they are negotiating through the media, if you ask me what my perspective on it. I think Mitch McConnell and the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate, are saying, listen, it's just not going to happen. We're in the middle of a presidential election. It's an open seat. You're not up for re-election. We aren't going to take up any of your nominations, so don't even bother. I'm not sure that's actually the case. I think it's probably more of a negotiation tactic.
Sure.
I think that they're trying to push Obama to the right with his nomination. And that's probably what is going to end up happening. I would suspect that if Obama nominates anybody, it would be someone, without this back and forth, it would likely be someone, who would be, I guess, what we would call a liberal justice, one of the Sotomayors or Kagans or, the other two he's nominated so far. Very, very, left of center. Obviously, Scalia being what they would call a conservative justice, he'd be able to tip the scale of the court in the liberal cause favor. And I don't think the Republicans want that for, I think, very good reason from my perspective.
Isn't there there's some precedent in the lame duck year of presidents, whether it's a Supreme Court justice or even some of the appellate appointments. There's a period where they just sort of trend off and it just holds.
It happens more. It's more often that they don't appoint in their final year than they do. And look, this is the way I see it. Okay, if I put myself in Obama's shoes, and I can't pretend that I think like him because I don't, because I mean there's very little he's done in his presidency that I've agreed with on a policy level. So, if I were in his shoes, though, it's an opportunity for him. If he goes and he appoints a moderate, if he goes and he finds a moderate justice, somebody who doesn't have a reputation for being left of center, someone who's just kind of down the middle, another Kennedy or someone like that, it could really tip the scales in the favor of the presidential candidate for the Democrats if he did that and the Senate didn't take it up.
Okay.
However, I don't. He's more of a. I see him as more of an ideologue than I do see him as a pragmatist. Like Bill Clinton was a pragmatist, in my opinion.
Yep.
I think that Obama's he's more idealistic with the way he approaches things, and he believes a certain thing, and that's, I respect that. The people elected him twice. He has, he's the president. He can do what he thinks is best. His approach has been more ideological in the past. So I would suspect that if he nominates somebody, it's going to be somebody who's a liberal justice potentially. But if he didn't, if he nominated the person they're talking about out of Nevada, the governor, who's a Republican actually, supposedly a very moderate Republican, it'd be very difficult for the Senate not to take that up.
Yeah.
It'd be very difficult, politically speaking, not to take that up. But we'll see what he does. I think that the Senate has every right to take up the nominees and reject all of them, or not take them up at all. It's the Constitution says the president nominates the person who's going to be appointed, and the Senate either gives the advice and consent or doesn't. There's no requirement to take it up for a vote. So I think what's really unfortunate here is that we have a jurist like Justice Scalia, who meant so much to the country in so many ways and was such a constitutional protector, which I think is really important on the Supreme Court. And that he is sort of, his death has sort of been already forgotten, and we're already focused exclusively on politics. And that's, I guess, sort of the nature of the beast on the federal, level during a presidential campaign. But, he did a lot of great, wonderful things for the court and for the country. So I think it's sort of unfortunate that we had to go there already. I think that's what's going to happen is he's going to nominate somebody.
Great.
And the Senate's not going to take him up. I think that's what's going to happen, and then the political chips will fall where they may.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest with us on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and maybe we can have you back in May to chat with us a little bit about the budget process.
I appreciate it, Josh. Thanks for having me on. And
thank you, Joe.
I'd like to come back whenever you have a spot for me.
Thank you.
Take care.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodwright Replacement Windows. Why Anderson? With low E glass, low maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our guest, next guest is Peg Leeko, who's a local activist in the Democratic City Committee. Peg, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Josh.
Well, this is the presidential season, and before we get into that, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, and then let's talk about the upcoming race.
Sure, thanks. Well, I've lived here 99% of my life here on Cape Ann, have two children and a wonderful husband, and am retired now, so that's pleasant. But, my background really came through my education in social work at Wheelock College and environmental sciences at UNH. So from my background at Wheelock, I was a single parent at the time, and I got a position at Head Start, and that really helped me to get ahead in the world, to get off of the assistance I needed for a year, to get work, to get daycare for my kids and such. So that was really, I think, the time when activism and work for families and women came into my sphere.
Okay. Right, and now you're actively working for one of the Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton. Tell us about that.
Yes, I am. Well, I like to say first and foremost that I am not choosing Hillary because of her gender. Many people mistakenly think that if you're a feminist or working for women's rights, you just lockstep will vote for the woman candidate. That's not the case for me. I really think that Hillary is just the most qualified person for the job.
Mm-hmm.
She has the qualifications broadly and specifically. If you look at all the candidates' backgrounds, Hillary is the one who comes up the shining star.
Now, you and I talked a little bit before you were on the show the other day, and you started rattling off or listing off some of her accomplishments as a Secretary of State, as a U.S. Senator from New York. Tell us about those. Share with the listening audience some of those things that you and I chatted about.
Sure. Well, it's really the fact that for the last 30, 40 years, Hillary has continually increased her knowledge base and increased her qualifications. She first started out really working for women and children's rights. And, that's an important facet of our country. So that's where I started with her. But she, as Secretary of State, she negotiated a peace agreement between Hamas and Israel. She has visited more than 49 countries in her role as First Lady, Senator from New York, and as well as Secretary of State. So, she has a long background in skills in negotiating the important subjects and topics that we really have as concerns. We want someone in the White House who has the skills, the demeanor, the education, and the qualifications to meet with all kinds of people in all kinds of situations.
Good. What are some of the things that she did as that impressed you the most that she did as a U.S. senator?
Well, as a senator in New York, one of the amazing things that happened, and tragic things that happened, was, very shortly after she was elected, 9/11 happened. And so she spent quite a good deal of her Senate time in New York getting insurance coverage and medical coverage for the first responders, working with victims and making sure that they had coverage. That really took up a lot of her Senate career, as well as helping to get the funding to rebuild the World Trade Center. A lot of her focus and her time spent in the Senate, you know, she really got a crash course in this is how we respond, this is how we take care of our citizens and make sure that they have what they need after they were either involved in or a first responder. So I think that was really a great step forward for her.
What is the what is her message, if you will? What is she going to bring to the equation as a president if she's the choice of the public in November?
Well, you know, Hillary believes in lifting the tide, lifting the boat, working with the poor, the children, the women, and the families, and the middle-class families of this country so that we can go forward together into the future. She has an optimistic view for our future. She focuses on the positive, and I think that's really an important message. You know, the Democratic Party for many, many years has been the party of help and assistance to those who need it. It's been the party of the people. I like to say that the Democrats help lift you up, and lately the Republicans want to hold you down. And as a woman, they certainly want to hold down my reproductive rights and my equal pay rights and many other topics.
Okay. What do you think of the Republican Party's nominee? Who do you think is going to emerge from that crowd? And assuming your candidate Hillary is the Democratic nominee, who's the best one for her to run against if she's to succeed and become president? In your view. And it's all right if you don't have the answer.
That's a difficult question for me to answer.
That's okay.
But I, you know, I've been reading interesting pieces, and one of the interesting things that I read is that many Trump supporters are, you know, so right-leaning. But I also have read that many Trump supporters are not the folks that actually go and vote. So that's an interesting point to consider. I think whatever nominee she runs against, she's going to run a clean campaign, a civil campaign. I mean, this election season has been particularly uncivil. And
that's right.
That's certainly the point I would, you know, draw to go back to again and again and again. If Trump were the nominee and Hillary were the nominee, who would you want speaking to the heads of state and negotiating very delicate military and non-military treaties? You know, do you want someone who has the qualification, who's already been in that milieu, or do you want someone who screams and yells and, I mean, Trump's language is just appalling, let alone his politics. I guess I would say Trump, because I think that many moderate Republicans might just switch over to Hillary if Trump is the nominee.
Very well. As we wind down, any predictions for next week?
For next week, I predict that Hillary will take Super Tuesday. I predict that after Super Tuesday, Bernie will probably hang in for a couple more states, and then we can hang our hats on Hillary as the nominee for first woman president of the United States.
Right. Very well. Do you know, I was reading recently, and you may not know this, but the first president to run against a woman for president. Do you want to guess who that was?
It was way back in the day. I know that.
Yeah. It was Ulysses Grant. That shocked me. Ulysses Grant ran against a woman for president. Believe it or not. Well, anyway, well, thank you for being a guest on our program, Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly appreciate your views and perspectives of the upcoming race, and wish you the very best going forward.
Well, thanks. I welcome the opportunity to speak today, and I encourage everybody to vote.
Great. Thank you, Peg.
Hey.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, well, you covered the political spectrum here a little bit today.
Yeah, yeah.
2-1, you had Democrat, Republican. You'll have to balance that out, I suppose, in the future somehow.
Yeah, well, but we've reached out to a lot of the Republican candidates that they seem to be slipping away before so they're not getting back to us. But
you don't want my opinion.
I know.
you got that right. Okay, we're going to try to go back to Fridays in a couple of weeks, see if that's a better time slot. Fridays at 10 a.m. But next week we'll have our regular Thursday slot, and maybe a couple of people you got lined up.
Sapatio Romeo is going to be on and talking about a whole range of things.
Who's that?
The Gloucester Mayor.
Oh, the Gloucester Mayor.
And Brian LaPierre, the City Council President in Lynn. Kathy Boudreau, who's been on our show before, is going to be talking about some specific issues in the insurance industry that to share with us. And we'll see who else, how much time is allotted. We may have still another guest. Too.
Okay, sounds great. All right, that's Josh Arnold. This is Trending Now. Your producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. Have a great day.
This is MSO Radio at msonewsports.com.